This episode of the Axon Credit Podcast is brought to you by Bambi. HR manager salaries average $70,000 a year. Only Bambi gives you a dedicated HR manager for just $99 a month. Get your free HR compliance audit at bambi.com/accidentalcreative, spelled bambe.com/accidentalcreative. This episode also brought to you by Headspace. Wouldn't it be great if there was a pocket-sized guide that helped you sleep, focus, act, and be better? There is. And if you have 10 minutes, Headspace can change your life. Check it out at headspace.com/accidentalcreative today. Welcome, friends, to the Accidental Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I am your host. I'm excited to welcome today to the show Phil Libin. Phil is the former CEO of one of my favorite companies in the world. Made a product that really changed my life, changed how I organized my thoughts and my ideas, and that company was Evernote. And we're going to talk a little bit about that today, but he also has a brand new company. It's called Mm-hmm. That's right. It's called Mm-hmm. And it is a video company that allows you to flexibly deliver video, which is something we're all having to do right now, right? We're all having to spend a lot of our time online looking at people looking at us, making presentations. And Phil and his team have developed a new way to deliver that video. And so we're going to talk about the nature of innovation, product development, sort of what went into his decision to focus on video during this time. And there's a lot for all of us to learn, any of us who do any kind of work, about how we should think about opportunity, innovation, and bringing new ideas to the marketplace. So I can't wait to dive into that conversation with Phil here in just a minute. Hey, we just launched something new. It's called AC Premium. You get ad-free episodes every week. You also get bonus episodes, access to the full archives of the Axon Creative Podcast, so hundreds of episodes. And I'm also putting together curated episodes each week in the feed, pulling out some episodes that I think are especially relevant to the conversation. So really encourage you to check it out at acpremium.me. That's acpremium.me. Also want to let you know, today's episode is brought to you by Bambi. So when running a business, HR issues can kill you. Wrongful termination suits, minimum wage requirements, labor regulations, and HR manager salaries aren't cheap, an average of $70,000 a year. Bambi, spelled B-A-M-B-E-E, was created specifically for small business. You can get a dedicated HR manager, craft HR policy, and maintain your compliance all for just $99 a month. With Bambi, you can change HR from your biggest liability to your biggest strength. Your dedicated HR manager is available by phone, email, or real-time chat. From onboarding to terminations, they customize your policies to fit your business and help you manage your employees day-to-day, all for just $99 a month. Month-to-month, no hidden fees, cancel anytime. You didn't start your business because you wanted to spend time on HR compliance. Let Bambi help. Get your free HR audit today. Go to bambi.com/accidentalcreative right now to schedule your free HR audit. That's bambi.com/accidentalcreative, spelled B-A-M to the B-E-E.com/accidentalcreative. And we thank Bambi for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. All right, let's dive into the conversation with Phil Libin and AC Premium subscribers. Stick around after. I'm going to share some of my takeaways, some of my personal insights from the interview. Here we go. Well, I am thrilled to welcome to the show today Phil Libin. Phil is the co-founder and CEO of All Turtles, and which we're going to talk about here in just a bit. He's also the co-founder and former CEO of, I think, one of the products that goes in the pantheon of essential tools for me. It would be on the Mount Rushmore of essential productivity tools for me, and that is Evernote. And so I am thrilled to welcome Phil to the podcast. Welcome, Phil, to the Axon Creative.
Wow, thank you. Great to be here, Todd.
So, I have to ask about you have a knack for naming things. That is one thing that I have observed about you. And I love the name of your company, All Turtles, and would love if you would just share with us a little bit about what you do.
All Turtles is a product studio. So, we try to make worthwhile products with kind of as little nonsense and inefficiency as possible.
Yeah. And one of the tools that you've created recently is called Mm-hmm. which has no vowels and is more of an expression, I think, right, than a name. And I'm also, I want to talk more about that tool here in a little bit, but I'm curious, you know, why the name? Mm-hmm.
Well, it just started off as a joke. I mean, the whole company started out, we were just goofing around. We didn't really think that we would be seriously making it into a product, but just wanted something to make our video meetings a little bit, you know, less boring, and it caught on. So the name kind of went from being, you know, haha, isn't this a terrible name, to something that that kind of stuck that we went with. We have lots of, you know, there's lots of frameworks and theories about how to name things, and we pretty much broke all the rules, but I think it worked out okay.
You know, it is funny how sometimes those little jokes or those little sort of, well, we'll stick with it for now kind of things, you know, over time, they just become integral to the way that you think about the product or about the service or whatever it is, or the brand, and they stick. And you have to think, if they stick with you, they're probably going to stick with other people as well.
I think so. And right now it's hard for me to imagine this product being called anything else. The name is just so, yeah, it's such a big part of it. But, you know, we wanted something that, I like the idea that it's a little bit of a performance. You know, the product is for helping people perform on camera. You know, just in a very casual way to be more effective. And the name is something that is very easy to say without thinking about it. You know, you just wind up saying it all the time unintentionally. Yeah. But to say it intentionally, when you actually mean to refer to the product, like even I have to pause for a second and, you know, consider briefly, like, how am I going to pronounce it? Which syllable am I going to inflect? And so you can't really say the name without thinking about it. You almost have to perform it. And so this idea of like a little micro performance, just thinking of the name of the product gets you in the mood to perform something, I thought was a kind of an elegant thing. So that's why we went with it.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk a little bit about the product itself, because it's a very timely thing that you've created. And I want to talk about the process, how it came to be, and ask you about product design. I have so many questions for you, but could you share a little bit about and what it does first, and then we'll kind of dive into talking about how it came to be.
So it's basically a tool to just make you better on video. You know, it's pretty tough to make an impression on video, whether you're doing it for, you know, a video meeting, you know, like with Zoom or WebEx or something, or you're you know, recording a presentation. Being effective on video is a different set of skills that up until, you know, this past year, the vast majority of people and companies didn't have those skills. They didn't have to interact over video very frequently. And that all changed because of the pandemic. And all of a sudden, almost, you know, most people and almost all companies now have video as a normal part of their lives. And I think that's actually just going to even accelerate, because we've figured out all sorts of ways to wire the world using video that are frankly better than what we used to have when everything was just in person. Not everything, but many things are. For example, you know, doctor's visits and sales calls and fundraising, and like these are all things that are just like better this way. And we noticed, we just started working on this in May, so just a couple of months after the pandemic started, after we were all locked up. And you know, we started working from home in March, I think, like a lot of people at All Turtles. And for the first couple of months of the lockdown, it was like, it wasn't boring because it was still kind of terrifying. You know, yes. You're like afraid every day, like, are we all going to die? It's at least interesting. But a couple of months into it, by May, like the immediate horror had like subsided a little bit. And so what was left was just, everything was just kind of dreary. And we just started noticing that all of our meetings and presentations weren't as effective as before. And we just tried to address that by letting people be charismatic over video.
Yeah. And, you know, as somebody who presents a ton, well, obviously I, like everybody, has been living on video over the past year, whether that's Zoom or, you know, Microsoft Teams or whatever tool, you know, I've been living on video, presenting to groups virtually, which I'd always avoided like the plague for, no pun intended, for years and years and years and years, because,
yeah, me too.
You know, I don't enjoy it as much. And frankly, the technology wasn't really sufficient to allow me to replicate a live experience, but, you know, tools like have made it absolutely possible to create an experience, a video experience. It's not just somebody, you know, a talking head, or the worst thing, I think, especially early on in the pandemic, before people started thinking, maybe there's a better way to do this, right? the worst thing is when you have the slide with 12-point font and you've got the little tiny talking head maybe over in the corner talking about a slide for 45 minutes, you know, or whatever. And you've discovered a way of doing this differently, making video more engaging, which I am personally grateful for, as somebody who now spends a lot of my time on video with others. Could you share a little bit about what the product does and how you kind of landed on that feature set?
Yeah, so basically, I by the way, I agree. I also was very much anti, you know, video when we could avoid it. Kind of in the before times, I would, you know, only do video meetings very reluctantly.
Yeah.
At Evernote, I actually like prohibited most video participation for important meetings. Like we didn't allow people to dial into board meetings, for example. We were like, show up in person or don't show up, because I thought it was such an inferior experience. And so when the pandemic started, like, I was very grumpy about this. I never did anything in video, and then I realized, well, this is what it is now. I might as well like get good at it. Like, and I've always thought that trying to make something like almost as good as it was before, like whining about how things, oh man, it used to be better. This isn't quite as good, but maybe we can make it almost as good. Like, that almost as good mindset is a very difficult one and kind of leads to disappointment. So instead of almost as good, it was easier for me to just say, well, how do we make the video experience ridiculously better than being in person for certain things? And I think that philosophy is actually easier to, you know, to execute. So yeah, what it does is it basically, it's really straightforward. It's basically three steps. You pick the environment you want to be on. You can use your real, you know, room or background, or we have all sorts of immersive environments that you can choose. If you're presenting, you just get your slides in. You can make slides directly in that are meant to be kind of minimalist and look beautiful, and they automatically match your surroundings and all that stuff. So you don't have to have like horribly ugly PowerPoint slides. Or if you have, you know, PowerPoint or Keynote or PDFs, you just drag them in there. And then that's it. And then you present, and you just talk, and you can control, kind of like in playing a video game, all aspects of it. So you can, you know, you can turn into a Jedi ghost and fly around and point to things with your, you know, with your face, and do things that are a combination of fun and useful. And we kind of call that, I think that's the essential combination. We call this Fuseful. Fuseful is, you know, a word that we stole from Biz Stone, one of our kind of mentors and investors. And it means fun and useful. So everything we build in has to be useful, because we are doing this so that people and companies can actually be better over video. But it also has to be fun, because like, fun is what's been missing. When you're having fun, you're just a lot more effective in communicating most things.
Yeah. And you know, there is a noted difference when somebody takes that approach to presenting on video. It elevates the entire experience for everyone. You know, versus the person who's kind of, first of all, they're not looking in the camera. They're maybe staring off at, you know, their screen, or they're checking their email or something while they're talking. You know, when somebody's putting the effort into it to make it, like you said, it can be a superior experience for some things. Listen, we will always need to get together for certain things. It will always be better in person. But there, I think on the other side of this, and I would be curious to know if you agree, I think that the way that we work is going to be transformed. There are going to be meetings that simply are not going to happen anymore in person. They don't need to. We've discovered that.
Yeah. Well, so for example, I'm on a few boards, right? And so like when we're having a discussion with a place where I'm on the board about, oh, you know, we've obviously had all the board meetings virtually over the past year. And now we're thinking, well, you know, in the next few months, like, you know, in summer, in the fall, like, do we want to get back together? Like, now the travel is going to be okay again. You know, maybe we should like all get together so we can like go out for dinner. And I said, look, I'm happy to fly out to have dinner with you guys. I just don't want to do the meeting in person. I want to do the board meeting virtually, because it's better, because I want to do it where I've got my two monitors, I've got all the supplementary equipment. I don't want to do the presentation flipping through paper slides while someone drones on. I want it to be like this. So let's do the meeting the way we've actually been doing them in the past, which has gotten to be really good. They're just better board meetings than they were sitting around a boring conference room in person. And then, yeah, I agree. Let's go have dinner. Let's go have drinks. I'll fly out just for that. Just, you know, make it a good dinner, make it worth my while. So there's like certain things where even when we can do them, they're just better being done on video. So we're going to keep doing those things on video, and the things that are better in person, like eating, yeah, we'll do those in person. So I think this is the best of both worlds.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So on March 12th, 2020, you tweeted, when the economy is strong, it's a good time to sell things. When the economy is weak, it's a good time to build things. It was a very appropriately timed tweet. where do your product ideas come from? You know, there are infinite numbers of things that you could work on. Where do your ideas come from? And then how do you decide which idea you want to work on?
Well, that second thing is much more important.
Okay.
I mean, the ideas are, you know, ideas are cheap. Yeah. Millions of good ideas. And, you know, like I don't like, maybe I come up with, you know, more ideas than the average person, but it doesn't matter. There's so many ideas, like, you know, you can't escape them. it's the prioritization. It's the timing that's the most important. So I think, you know, they come from different places. Oftentimes they're not my ideas. Like I came up with just because, again, I was just trying not to be bored and I was goofing around on Twitter and things like that. And it just kind of, you know, occurred to me. Evernote was certainly not my idea. Evernote was, you know, Stepan Pachikov and a few other people came up with that. But also, like, Evernote is like the least interesting idea in technology, in the sense that, like, well, what's the idea? Well, we're going to use computers to help you write things down and remember things. It's like literally been done 10,000 times before. Right. It's not the idea. It's the execution of it.
Yes.
But the real important thing, I think, is the timing. I think, like, especially for startups, like, just like with comedy, you know, it's all about the timing. And the timing is, you know, you want to work on things when they become possible for the first time in the history of the universe, like still hard, but possible. So you got to like find that time that, like, if you tried working on it a couple of years ago, it would have been crazy. But this year you can do it and you can actually get it done. Like, and you can make it mainstream. So it's that, like, trying to be sensitive to, like, what's changed in the world, in the technology stack, in the cultural stack, what's changed in the world to make, like, a previous idea that was, like, impossible, now it's possible for the first time, and then you just jump on it. So I just try to use that kind of philosophy for everything we do at All Turtles.
Yeah, well, that's a fascinating way to look at it, because you know, there are, like you said, I mean, there are any number of products that come along at the wrong time, right? Either the technology isn't sufficient to support the ambition of the idea. Yeah. Or frankly, it just comes along like it's too much of a me too, right? And the execution is too similar to something that's already there and mature and better. And, you know, why would you want to switch?
Too early or too late, or no one cares enough, or the timing is, you know, I ideas are plentiful.
Yeah.
Having perfect timing is hard. And obviously we have far from perfect timing, but we've gotten lucky a few times.
So do you, I'm curious, and obviously I'm not asking you to share any of these, but do you have ideas that you're sitting on right now because you know, okay, maybe in a couple of years, this is going to be the right idea to execute, but right now it's just not fully baked yet?
Yeah, lots. And it's not so much that the ideas aren't fully baked, it's that, you know, it just doesn't feel like the timing is right.
Yeah.
I think we fetishize in this society, in this culture, we fetishize ideas. You know, we have things like Shark Tank, where you're like, oh, and you pitch ideas, and like, right. Oh, this is all nonsense. It's entertainment, but it's like, that's not how things work. Rarely, very, very rarely do you get an idea that, like, the idea itself is, like, so shockingly good. Like, it almost never happens.
Yeah.
Almost all successful companies and products, like, the idea was solid. So don't get me wrong, there's lots of idiotic ideas. So you don't want to pick one of those. But as long as you're picking one of the, like, solid ideas, which, you know, we have all frameworks for figuring out how solid it is. But there's, like, surefire ways to know that your idea is solid. Like, surefire way, you won't go wrong. Then once you have that, then it's really just about, well, there's 1,000 of those. You can only work on one or two or 10, depending on, you know, how you're set up. Which ones are you going to work on? It all comes down to timing.
Hey friends, we're going to get back to the conversation with Phil Libin in just a minute. Before we do, I want to let you know this episode is also sponsored by Headspace. So wouldn't it be great if there was a pocket-sized guide that helped you sleep and focus and act and be better? Well, guess what? There is. And if you have 10 minutes, Headspace can change your life. Headspace is your daily dose of mindfulness in the form of guided meditations in an easy-to-use app. Headspace is one of the only meditation apps advancing the field of mindfulness and meditation through clinically validated research. So whatever the situation, Headspace really can help you feel better. You overwhelmed? Headspace has a 3-minute SOS meditation for you. Need some help falling asleep? Headspace has wind down sessions their members swear by. And for parents, Headspace even has morning meditations you can do with your kids. Headspace's approach to mindfulness can reduce stress, improve sleep, boost focus, and increase your overall sense of well-being. What I love about Headspace is it doesn't matter how much time I have. Maybe I have 10 minutes before I have an important call. Maybe I have, you know, 20 minutes in the evening after a stressful day. Whenever and wherever I want to focus, I want to re-engage, I want to practice mindfulness, Headspace helps me do it. Headspace is backed by 25 published studies on its benefits, 600,000 five-star reviews, and over 60 million downloads. Headspace makes it easy for you to build a life-changing meditation practice with mindfulness that works for you on your schedule, anytime, anywhere. You deserve to feel happier, and Headspace is meditation made simple. Go to headspace.com/accidentalcreative. That's headspace.com/accidentalcreative for a free 1 month trial with access to Headspace's full library of meditations for every situation. This is the best deal offered right now, so head to headspace.com/accidentalcreative today. We thank Headspace for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. And now back to our conversation with Phil Libin.
Yeah. Well, to extend that conversation a little bit, I read a quote from you. You were being interviewed, I think, by the BBC maybe, and you said, "I'm a good editor. I can pull things together and remove the 80% that is not useful." And I agree with you. I think, you know, great editing is what makes a product truly phenomenal. Is there a process that you use to edit? Are there a set of questions you ask, or is it mostly intuition? Or what does your editorial process look like?
I have a few frameworks for thinking about this kind of stuff. The most thing, obviously, is like a CEO basically has three jobs that are like the same three jobs all the time. It's, you know, you have to control what the vision is. You have to make sure that you've got the right people to execute that vision. You need to make sure there's enough money in the bank to do it. So, like, ultimately, like, those are the three things you have to do, and everything else, you know, everything else you can delegate. And of those, it's the people that are by far the most important and the hardest, right? Assuming the vision is plausible, like, it doesn't have to be, you know, super genius. Assuming the vision is plausible and you like stick to it or change it when you need to. And you just need the people. Like, the money takes care of itself. The people are the most important thing. So it's just getting a team of people together that are much better than I am at everything they do. So I have to be the most incompetent person in the company, or else I've done something really, really wrong.
Yeah.
And in terms of like the editing, you know, there's frameworks for it. So like one framework is, we kind of reject this like MVP thinking, like minimum viable product thinking that a lot of startups engaging. I think it's just I don't think it's a very good model. We go with a modified version, which is the MAP, the minimum awesome product. Mm. The idea is like everything that we build has to start at awesome. It has to be amazingly good for something, even if it's like fully incomplete and pretty bad in other things. Like, you have to get to that, like, oh, this is amazing. Like, it's not enough to just have the table stakes. In fact, the table stakes don't matter. You know, when the first iPhone came out, it didn't have a keyboard, and everyone was like, well, I'm not going to use a smartphone without a keyboard. Right. And it didn't even have cut and paste. I don't know if you remember, like, you couldn't cut and paste the first iPhone. And everyone was like, that's ridiculous. I've been cutting and pasting for, you know, since my grandfather, you know, started cutting and pasting on smartphones. How can I total table stakes? This is not a serious product. And, you know, and Apple's like, yeah, whatever. Like, we'll get to cut and paste in a few years. And as for keyboards, you think you need it, but you don't. Right. But it was awesome in other ways. And so like a product like that, which could be like very much incomplete as long as it's like sharply great. And so a lot of startup editing is really about like, let's get rid of the stuff that we're doing because we feel like we have to. Because we somehow feel like it's table stakes or it's expected, like that's where most of the time wasting comes in. And that whole like giant sea of like, well, we're not really excited about this, but like, it feels like it's a thing that's necessary. Let's get rid of 80% of that. Yeah. And then just like double down the stuff that, you know, we're really excited about.
I love that framework of minimum awesome product because, you know, MVP is everywhere. And I think really that's an excuse to sort of ship something that maybe, you know, isn't really 100%. You know, going to resonate with people. And I wonder how many products never really gain traction simply because there's no spark there, because they're just trying to put something out to see what happens, right? Versus really trying to think, how can we make something that people suddenly realize they can't live without? Even if it's not perfect yet, it's something people can't live without for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the way that I think about product market fit for our kinds of products is we need to be the default answer for some important question for some worthwhile set of people. So somebody's got to ask, like, have a problem. They ask a question, and our product is the default answer. Like, we're the first. Like, that's what they think of first, right? So, for example, Stripe is a good example of this, where, like, what's the question? Well, the question is, well, how are we going to implement payments? And, like, who's asking that question? Well, you know, developers, entrepreneurs, founders. Default answer, Stripe. Yeah. You know, wasn't always the case, but, like, has been since they launched. You know, Gusto. It's like, what's the question? Well, how are we going to run payroll and benefits? Who's asking? Well, you know, yeah, like, founders. Default answer, Gusto.
Right.
Evernote was that way. Yeah. Like, we want to be, like, I know a product has product market fit if we've become the default answer to something. And then it doesn't mean that it's a perfect product. It's certainly not a perfect product. It's certainly not 100% product. It certainly has all sorts of places that it's frustrating, but we are the default answer to some important question for some worthwhile people, some worthwhile audience. And we just have to be very intentional about that. And then if you get that, then I think it buys you time to get everything else in order.
Yeah, I love that. I absolutely love that mindset. Okay, so I want to honor your time. I have one more question for you. It's not one I prepared you for, so sorry about that. I'd be curious to hear if there was a piece of advice that you received at some point in your life that you acted on that changed your life in some way, maybe that you didn't expect at the time, but it turned out to be advice that was really good advice and that changed your life.
Man, it's so hard to even pick one. It's been that's happened so much. I mean, there's I guess in a you mean like in a work setting, like what kind of thing is most interesting?
You can choose whatever stands out in your mind.
I think probably the I got this advice as a CEO at Evernote, kind of a while ago. And this was from one of our investors at Evernote. It was, I think it was Henry Ellenbogen, who I think he was at T. Rowe Price at the time. And he said, and this is amazing. I've, like, given this advice a lot, and I still follow it all the time. He said, look at the founder and CEO. You're going to be the first person to know when something's really wrong. Like, you're going to be the first person to sense that, like, look, this isn't going right. Something bad is happening. Like, the company isn't doing what I think it should be doing. You're going to be the first person to know. And you're going to be the last person to admit it. Which is kind of a brilliant, like, formulation, right? Like, you have your fingers everywhere. You have, like, more information than anyone else. You just have a feel for it. You're going to be the first person to know when something is wrong, but you also have the most invested. You're going to be the last person to actually admit it. And so what you have to do is be aware of that and then try to defeat it. How do you use the superpower of being the first person to know and mitigate against that? Like, yeah, but you're not going to admit it to yourself because you have, like, so much at stake. He suggested a process, which I still do with every project, which is, find a time when you're in a pretty good mood. You don't want to do this when you're, like, frustrated and overwhelmed. When you're in a pretty decent mood, just write down, and you don't have to share it with anyone, just, like, write it down for yourself. What do you want to accomplish in the next 6 months or 12 months, whatever time frame you want, that if you accomplish it in that time period, you're going to be like, yep, we're doing great. Things are going according to plan. And if you don't accomplish it, you're going to be like, oh, something is seriously wrong. Like, decide that, write it down. You can share it if you want or don't. I usually don't. Sometimes I share it with some people. Sometimes I just, like, have this list of myself. I'm like, if we get these things done in 6 months, I'm going to be like, yeah, we're doing well. And if we don't get these things done, I'm going to be like, something has gone horribly wrong. And then just, you know, put it aside and then look at it when times are tough in 6 months, because, like, both ways work really well. Sometimes, like, 6 months go by and you actually feel like crap and you look at this thing and you're like, oh, wow, we did all that stuff. I just, like, it's hard to acknowledge because in the day to day, you, like, focus so much on what's going wrong. But actually, look, 6 months ago, I said that I'd be super happy. If we accomplished the things, we accomplished it. I need to be super happy. Like, that's actually really useful. Yeah. Or you kind of, sometimes you're pretending that things are great, but you're like, oh, but 6 months ago, I said we have to do these things. We didn't do any of them. Why do I still feel good? Am I just lying to myself? So that kind of conversation, that, like, overcoming the founder dynamic of, doubling down on being the first person to know when something is wrong, but defeating the being the last person to admit it has been super powerful.
Yeah. Wow. That is such great advice. And I think I have some work to do when we get off this call.
It's really useful. Every time I'm talking to a founder in any of our companies or anything else, and they're like super frustrated and like kind of depressed, which is a lot. I mean, being a founder is brutally hard. I usually say that. I'm like, look, just like, don't do it right now because you're in a bad mood. So just like, you know, next time in the next couple of weeks, when you wake up and you're feeling pretty good, sit down and do this. And then don't worry about it. And then just focus on doing those things.
Yeah.
And then if it works out, you'll be great. And if it doesn't, then look, anything can always fail. Like failure is always an option and there's nothing to be afraid of.
Yeah, that is fantastic. Well, Phil, if people want to come learn more about Mm-hmm and All Turtles and all things that you're up to, where can they go?
Well, it's mm-hmm.app or all-turtles.com, or I'm just plibin on Twitter.
Fantastic. Well, I mean, you know this, I'm a huge fan. I've been following you for years and years and years. You have literally changed my life with products you've created and the way that I work. So thank you for all that you do. Thanks for continuing to fight the good fight and try to make all of our lives better. Really appreciate it.
Todd, thank you. And very kind of you. I didn't create those products. I was privileged enough to be on the team that made them, but yeah, there's lots of people that made them possible. But thank you.
Wonderful. Thanks to Phil Libin, and thank you for listening. If you're an AC Premium subscriber, stick around after the music. I'm going to share with you my big takeaways from this conversation. I took so much away from this. So if you want to subscribe to AC Premium, you can do so at acpremium.me. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.